Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording in our studio at the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today, we're going to be talking in depth about climate change and sustainability issues during the first half of our show. We'll tell you about an outrageous letter we received from a climate change skeptic and how we've decided to respond. You'll hear the latest chilling findings of scientific teams measuring polar ice in Antarctica and why coastal residents in North America should be concerned. Our newsmaker interview today is with Jim Bell, a world-renowned ecological designer who will be telling us about his vision for creating a San Diego-Tijuana border region that can be self-sustaining in energy, food, and water. In our sports report, Ed Barrena will have the latest on the Aztecs' March Madness. And in the second half of today's show, we'll tell you why a judge dropped gang conspiracy charges against 14 local defendants in a landmark case in which the ACLU challenged District Attorney Bonnie DeMonis on constitutional grounds. La Mesa has picked a new police chief. Find out who on today's show. On Destination East County, we'll tell you about some hot happenings coming up, from music concerts to a star party, historical reenactments, Easter egg hunts, and a family fiddle camp. Automated electronic defibrillators can save lives after a heart attack. Now the county wants your help mapping the location of AEDs across our region, and we'll have the details. We'll also tell you about Coffee with the Sheriff and Santee, plus a weather update and more. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
This is Ed Barrena. I'm here on East County Magazine with our editor, Miriam Raftery, and we were going to talk about climate change a bit. Recently on our website, eastcountymagazine.org, we reported on Florida's governor banning all state employees from talking or writing about climate change. And in that article, we also were discussing a new movie that came out aimed at debunking climate change deniers, as well as covering the effort or movement asking media to stop providing airtime to people who promote fraudulent claims about the climate, just as currently media denies airtime to Holocaust deniers or people who say the earth is flat. Things like that. So we posted the article, and we received a comment from a reader who took issue with our coverage and seemed upset. What did he say, Miriam?
Well, it was really a very heated comment, Ed. For starters, he wrote, "Man-made climate change is not a fact. It is a theory, and a fraudulent one at that." And he then went on to liken the effort to censor climate change skeptics or deniers to the Catholic Church silencing Galileo.
Well, that's pretty funny. Because Galileo was an independent voice speaking for science against the status quo.
Right. He was actually the scientist who came up with the revolutionary idea that the Earth revolves around the sun, not the other way around. And the church considered that heresy and put him under house arrest and tried their best to silence him.
Yes, this was all 500 years ago or so.
Exactly. Yeah, so he's kind of got it backwards, doesn't he? Because back then it was scientists that were being suppressed, and now it's scientists trying to suppress the voices of ignorance, really, people that don't have the facts and are out there spouting things that just aren't true.
Yeah, it's kind of funny using an example of a scientist describing something based on empirical evidence as being the example for someone who's ignoring empirical evidence.
Yeah, exactly. Correct? Well, and that wasn't all. The reader went on, and he went on to denounce the efforts by scientists to silence these climate change deniers in even stronger terms.
I'll read what he said. He wrote that, quote, "Only the most evil and despotic abusers of humanity would think that shutting debate is an answer to anything. Hitler, Stalin, Mao, and ISIS would be proud. Using the term denier is also the mark of a person lower than a child molester," unquote.
Yeah, that's pretty unbelievable, isn't it? So besides violating our site's rules for avoiding personal insults, I personally don't like being compared to a child molester for telling the truth about climate change and climate change deniers, this guy, he wrote entirely in lowercase letters, full of grammatical errors, and basically revealed a lot of ignorance himself, I think.
Yeah, I mean, saying that if you say that someone's denying something that they're lower than a child molester, that's kind of a bizarre statement, in my opinion. This person may have been on some sort of medication or forgot to take some medication. Okay, so they obviously violated our site's rules with some of these statements. And
yeah, we let it stand, and I used it as an opportunity to educate our readers a little bit more. And, you know, a lot of people may not realize it, but my degree actually is in environmental studies. And back in the 1970s, I studied under a top climate scientist at the University of California at Santa Barbara. And he warned back then, with what I will say was absolute accuracy, you know, in the coming years we saw this, about the changes we would be seeing because
of currently seeing.
Exactly. Temperature extremes, worsening storms such as hurricanes, severe fires here in the West, rising sea levels. It's already measurable and it's going to get worse, according to the latest findings. I mean, I've actually read the scientific data on this. Every time I see something on this, whether it's from the United Nations or the World's Meteorological Society, these top, you know, scientific groups, National Geographic, I read this stuff because this is my field. So when I challenged this reader in the comment section how many actual scientific papers he's read, of course, he didn't answer, probably none.
Yeah, he may not even be familiar with an abstract at all. The other thing is, I know a lot of listeners out there maybe have opinions regarding climate change, this and that. Some people think it's a lot of BS. Some people think it's just an excuse to put a bunch of carbon tax out there. So a lot of people have opinions, but it's good to be able to back up your opinions with fact and not just start slamming people through insults or making baseless comparisons to child molesters and despots.
Yeah, correct. I mean, obviously, it's right to be skeptical if you see just the politicians putting forward this, and especially if they're taking money from special interests, whether it's, you know, the green industry or the oil industry.
Right.
These are things that we should be skeptical of. But when we're seeing independent scientists who aren't in the payroll of anybody coming to these conclusions, then we as journalists have an imperative to inform the public of the truth and not promote propaganda in any way, shape, or form. So, listeners, these are some facts. 97% of all climate scientists in the entire world agree that global warming is real and man-made, while the leading denier voices, you know, that 3% that's left, these are pretty much people who are on the payroll of the fossil fuel industry. That's been documented. Every once in a while, we'll get somebody send us something about some expert they found. They say, I've got to read it. And when I do the research so far, 100% of the time, I was able to trace them back and trace their donations and find out that they're funded by the oil industry or the coal industry.
Yeah. And I want to mention real quick that modern research, a lot of people just go on the internet and do a Google search. You know, that's not real empirical research. That's not, you're not going to find hard data on the web unless you go to an actual forum where they post the PDF of the entire research and all their facts and all their data.
Exactly. And if you deny climate change, it's like saying essentially that the top scientists at Scripps Institute of Oceanography and at UCSD here in San Diego don't know what they're talking about. These are some of the leading climate change experts in the whole world right here in San Diego, and they have sounded the alarm about what could happen to San Diego with climate change, worsening fires, flooding at the coastline, and so forth. And as for those on the other side that claim to be scientists, we had one here that was speaking at San Diego State or somewhere last year, and he claimed to be a member of the House of Lords. It turned out he was debunked. He'd never been in the House of Lords. Why would anyone take the viewpoint of someone like that, who isn't even a scientist, you know, who lies about his background to inflate his resume? I don't understand that.
The House of Lords is a member of Parliament or something like
that? Right. It's one of the Houses of Parliament, exactly, in England. House of Lords is House of Parliament in England. And in fact, some of these very same so-called scientists now who are out there claiming global warming is a hoax, well, guess what? It turns out they're the same scientists who were saying that tobacco wasn't harmful to your health a generation ago, back when they were shilling for the tobacco industry and on their payroll. We all know now that obviously that wasn't true. So, you know, where's their credibility?
And you know, I keep my ear tuned to a lot of the discussions out there, you know, political discussions, and I hear a lot of radio hosts, you know, especially conservative talk hosts, and they're always talking about how climate change is such a lie and all this stuff, but they really have no basis for their claims. And these ideas proliferate throughout society, and they see these people as an authority figure that have the facts, but the facts are pretty insurmountable. We have a report coming up later in the show regarding some shocking revelations that Miriam is reporting on. You know, I think people need to just sit down and instead of being so convicted to an opinion that it's all a hoax or a scam, they really need to open their eyes to the actual data itself.
Yeah, and we should remember that the very word conservative should be all about conserving our natural resources. You know, you look back at Teddy Roosevelt, one of the great Republican presidents that we once had, who was the one that started the national park system. President Nixon started the Environmental Protection Agency. So conservation isn't supposed to be a dirty word that's all about, you know, lefty liberal politics. And certainly conserving our planet for future generations, I think most sane people would believe, is something that everyone, whether you're left, right, green, libertarian, or somewhere in the middle, should be able to agree that we need to protect our planet. And we all need to do our due diligence to research this and come to the right conclusions. Credible scientists all agree that greenhouse gas emissions that are pumped into our environment from fossil fuels since the start of the Industrial Revolution have rapidly accelerated climate change. If you look at a chart, you can see this. Yes, have there been fluctuations in climate and temperatures, you know, throughout history? Of course, there have been, but not nearly to the extreme degree. I mean, it just skyrockets up over the last 100 years, and it's continuing to do so.
Now, one of the arguments I've heard from the other side saying that that climate change is not happening was that basically everything is based off these computer models, and that the computer models are somehow flawed, and that none of this is actually happening. It's just an excuse to tax the corporations.
Well, show me one shred of evidence, to prove that. There's zero. The truth is that many of the scientists are saying we may soon be, if we are not already, be at an irreversible tipping point, at which time there will be no turning back. And the consequences of being wrong on this are as dire as it gets. We're talking about a planet that could be uninhabitable for human life. Uninhabitable for human life. You know, when Mayor Mark Lewis, who's a conservative, when he was the mayor of El Cajon, they took some steps to reduce their greenhouse gas emissions. And what he said to me was, he said, you know, I'm not sure if this climate change stuff is real, Miriam, but we can't afford to be wrong on it. We can't afford to be wrong. So if we're going to err, shouldn't we err on the side of being safe and protecting the planet for future generations? Worst thing we can do is have cleaner emissions when it wasn't needed. Yeah. But if we're wrong the other way, the consequences are terrible.
Yeah. And I mean, it's not really worth just making a few bucks to like destroy the planet. You know, I grew up with asthma, and I know that the air quality has improved over the course of my lifetime, you know, due to reducing emissions in vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, we're not all the way there. We're seeing a lot of evidence that we're at a tipping point right now. And if we can enact things to actually, like you're saying, be conservative about what we put out into the environment, we can stem the tide of some of this stuff now. But first, people have to basically get an agreement that there is a problem. And that's why it's so easy to undermine 97% of the world's climate scientists and just say a bunch of rhetoric in order to further your own endeavors and your own gains.
Right. Well, on that note, Ed, we feel more compelled as ever as journalists here at East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, to make sure that we are bringing truth to our readers. And we're really going to be making efforts in the coming weeks and months here to bring you the latest actual scientific findings, not propaganda, but findings of real scientists on this as news breaks. And so today, now we're going to go to our Green Scene report, and we're going to have the latest, rather alarming, scientific findings on this coming up next.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
Here's some chilling news. International teams of scientists in Antarctica have reached disturbing conclusions, the Washington Post reports. An enormous glacier in East Antarctica has been destabilized by a trough of warm ocean water discovered underneath, likely bringing about irreversible destabilization that will set in motion a sea level rise average over 10 feet worldwide. And that's not all. In December, other scientists found likely irreversible melting of glacial ice in West Antarctica, capable of raising sea levels 11 feet. Do the math. Between east and west, that's a potential rise of 21 feet from water released by these two ice masses alone. The Totten Glacier in East Antarctica is melting due to warm water beneath it. The 90-mile-long glacier holds back a larger ice catchment that could cause sea levels to rise dramatically. Lead study author Jameen Greenbaum at the University of Texas, yes, a conservative red state scientist, says that's a conservative limit. The scientists used three types of measurements, gravitational, radar, and laser altimetry, in flights over the ice to determine what was happening underneath. And they learned that the Totten Glacier is floating, it's not solid. Next up, they hope to use undersea drones to gather more scientific data. There's even more bad news for those of us here in North America. Rising sea levels won't be distributed evenly due to gravity. Antarctica is so massive that it turns out it produces its own gravitational pull, tugging the ocean toward it. If it loses massive amounts of ice, the gravitational pull will be reduced and the ocean will slosh back toward the northern hemisphere. So here in the United States, the sea level could rise 25% higher than anywhere else. Ironically, it's the U.S. that also has pumped out the most greenhouse gases contributing to climate change, leading some to wryly observe that the planet may get its revenge. But that won't happen right away. Scientists predict it will take generations, so our descendants may someday see coastal San Diego underwater, and some inland areas may be beachfront property. Of course, our children and their children may not be around to see these changes, since rapid climate change could also ultimately warm the planet to levels unsustainable for human life. Martin Siegert, a co-author of the study from the Grantham Institute at Imperial College in London, concludes, with warming oceans, it's difficult to see how a process that starts now would be reversed or reversible in a warming world. Reporting for East County Magazine's Green Scene, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center here in El Cajon. Today, our theme is sustainability for our region and for the world, and my very special guest today is Jim Bell. Jim is a brilliant and world-famous ecological designer who talks about creating life-sustaining and supporting systems for the future. Jim has been a speaker at UCSD, San Diego State University, as well as worldwide symposiums, including recently. He was featured in a video presentation in a conference put on by the Chinese government about how to reduce CO2 emissions. Jim, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, Jim, I understand that you recently spoke at a World War CO2 event in San Diego in early March. Tell us what that was all about.
Yeah, there was a locally organized event to basically people having the feeling that, you know, the best thing we can do is figure out ways that we can get the things we need and want without producing CO2, like becoming renewable energy self-sufficient.
And why is that so important? You're an expert on this. Can you give our readers just a couple of the facts on where we are on all this?
Well, there's been a lot of scientists that have studied this, and I would say the vast majority are convinced that humans are contributing to global warming or climate change in one level or another. One thing that, you know, we've seen recently, that one of the senators hold up a snowball and saying, oh, this proves, in effect, global warming isn't happening because we have this big winter. That's because people misunderstand what the whole problem is, because as we capture more energy from the sun and keep it longer in our planet's atmosphere, it basically puts more energy in the weather system. So you can have hotter conditions, but you can also have colder conditions and stronger blizzards and stronger hurricanes and everything else. So it's not as simple as most people think.
Right. It's really extremes of climate at both ends of the spectrum, heat and cold. Now, coming up, I understand you're working on printing out 20,000 copies of a pamphlet.
Yes. It has a kind of a long name, but the main part of it is consciousness and knowledge. And what I was looking at is anybody who's paying attention sees we're doing a lot of horrible things to our life support system. Heating up the climate is just one of the many, many things. We produce somewhere around 1,000 new chemical compounds every year that get added to our common environment.
Very true. When we talk about sustainability, so often the the discussion goes off on climate change, which is certainly important, but there is a lot more like chemical pollution and overpumping of groundwater and all these other issues, food sustainability. The pamphlet, as you mentioned, is called Consciousness and Knowledge, Achieving Peace, Prosperity, and Life Support Sustainability. It is published by the Ecological Life Systems Institute and Heartland Coalition Publication. Full disclosure, Heartland Coalition is also the parent organization behind East County Magazine. They're our publisher, although East County Magazine was not involved specifically in this particular pamphlet. So, Jim, tell us about where these are going to be distributed and what you hope to accomplish with it.
Well, 20,000 are going to be printed, 10,000 in Spanish, and the translation is almost complete, so we're just about ready to go to press. And then we have a budget where we're going to be distributing them on both sides of the border, mostly in Southern California and the Tijuana equivalent of the Tijuana part of the region.
So it's all about your ideas for creating a sustainable future for the cross-border region, San Diego and Tijuana?
Yeah, and it's for the world, too, because it's basically saying that, okay, if you really look at what's going on and you care about the future, you care about your grandchildren, you care about future generations, which I do, I ask my question, to live the modern world, what do we need to do in order to bring human activity into harmony with our planet's life support system?
Well, those are big ideas, Jim. Let's talk about some specifics of how you would go about doing this. I understand one of them is a plan for our region to become water self-sufficient, which is a huge issue in the middle of our fourth year of drought here with NASA. The latest scientific findings are that we could run out of water in our state in as little as a year.
Well, let me start by talking a little bit about energy, because that relates to water.
Okay.
And what I figured out is that current technology, off-the-shelf, commercially available PV panels, if we covered 43% of our roads and parking lots with those PV panels.
Solar, PV solar.
PV photovoltaic, people call them, panels, that we could be completely renewable energy self-sufficient.
And I understand you've done a study of just how many rooftops we have in San Diego. For those who might be skeptical about this, what did you find?
There still is really no hard data yet. I got some from the city and so forth, but I kind of looked at it from the perspective of I picked 1,000 square feet of roof and parking lot per capita, so this is man, woman, and child for our whole population. Then I also figured out, well, what if we increased efficiency by 40%? Then we're down to 26% coverage, so from 43% coverage to 26% coverage. And it turns out in both cases that we probably have enough space just in parking lots.
Interesting. So we don't even have to do roofs if we don't
want to. We may not have to do roofs or a little bit because there's been a study by a local parking expert who said there's between 4 and 6 parking spaces per car.
And that would make us totally energy self-sustainable. In other words, we wouldn't need, say, a Sunrise Power Link pumping in power from somewhere else or a nuclear power plant such as San Onofre that was just closed down.
Right. And the other thing about those plants, which most people don't consider, is that whenever we get energy from outside a region, even if it's generated with, you know, solar panels or something like that, when we pay our bill, all the money leaves our local economy.
Well, plus this is also much less environmentally destructive than some of the things we're seeing, like these humongous wind farms and desert solar projects, which while they do produce renewable power, maybe arguably better than coal or nuclear or fossil fuel, it definitely has negative environmental impacts and impacts on the quality of life in those communities. So this plan seems like it would be much more sensible, put it all on parking lots and maybe some of it on roofs and we're done.
Yeah, because we've destroyed the environment, basically. What the human settlement has destroyed the natural environment to a great degree. And this is our chance to actually make our roofs and parking lots into something valuable. Plus, you get shaded parking, too, at the same time.
What about water?
Say we did the 40% efficiency and we only need 26% coverage. Okay. And 40% efficiency is a relatively easy thing to achieve if we really put our minds to it. I would say 50% is easy to achieve, and I wouldn't be the only, quote, expert who would say that. But if we add another, and this was, I didn't know what this is going to be, and I didn't even know about how much we needed to actually install to be electricity self-sufficient, much less renewable energy self-sufficient, because that includes electricity and liquid and gaseous fuels. And so that was the start, was to figure out, well, how much energy do we use? That's a hard number to find, too. But I found it in a graph that was put out by SDG&E showing a typical summer day energy curve, and I did use that as a base.
Okay. And how does that translate into water savings?
Okay, it's that your electricity self-sufficient with 26%, you add another 4%, and use that electricity to run reverse osmosis pumps to convert salt water into fresh water.
Interesting.
And I'm assuming straight from the ocean, and my numbers are based on the Poseidon project, which is up in Carlsbad, which they're trying to build. The difference is that we wouldn't take the water directly from a lagoon or from the ocean. We'd take the water from wells right next to the ocean.
Interesting.
So all the water that we'd be using would be sand filtered, so no fish eggs, no young fish or anything in it, and then that water goes into the reverse osmosis system. 4%, so now we're up to 30% coverage for energy and water,
okay.
And that would produce 838,000 acre-feet of water a year, and I'm actually using more conservative numbers than they're using at Poseidon in my calculations, and we only use a little over 600,000 acre-feet of water a year in the county now.
Very interesting. Have you brought these ideas forward to the the city council or the board of supervisors?
I did bring them forward to the Metropolitan Water Board, their executive committee. Well, they were very appreciative and even complimented me that I was using current figures on how much water we actually use per capita and things like that. But nothing ever came of it.
Hmm.
It's like people are so involved in putting Band-Aids on things, they never look at, well, what's the real, what really solves this problem?
Yeah. Now, another issue is food sustainability. You've got some really interesting ideas there. Tell us about that.
Well, if anybody who does a study of the agricultural soils in the region will find, even though we've done a lot of bad development and things like that on some good ones, there's still a lot. We have the soils. The holdback has always been the lack of water. They were importing it in.
Yeah.
It's expensive.
As a side note, a lot of people don't know that San Diego County actually has more small farms of 10 acres or less than any county in America. Can you believe that? More
and
than in the Midwest.
One of the most organic farms, too.
But if we are running out of water, how do we do more agriculture?
If we install the reverse osmosis, okay, now we actually have over 200,000 acre-feet of water that we didn't have before.
Okay.
On top of what we normally use. And right now, agriculture basically uses the same water that we use, which is imported.
Mm-hmm.
But this allows us to use free solar energy to make the electricity to run the pumps and pump the water to the farms, wherever it needs to go.
There you go. And you have some ideas for urban agriculture, too. I understand your ideas wouldn't just be, farms way out in the rural areas someplace. Tell us about that.
Well, a lot of people have gardens, and that's definitely an excellent thing to do. And it's also, when you think about it, commute for the food is from your garden to your refrigerator or to your table.
Mm-hmm.
So that's obviously energy saving. I mean, organic agriculture is pretty good, and it's still a new emerging industry, and I'm 100% for it. But when you factor in the driving it from the state of Washington down here or something like that and refrigerated along the way, that starts to become a little questionable in terms of sustainability. Growing food anywhere you can locally is a good idea.
Now, Jim, you were also talking about creating a real free market economy for our region by adopting what you call true cost pricing and cradle-to-cradle pricing. Please explain for our listeners what that is.
This kind of came up when I was writing my first book that came out in 1994, because I was, looking at the economy and it seemed like the free market system seemed to be pretty good. And I was asking the question, well, if it's so good, why does it cause all these environmental and health problems along the way? And then it dawned on me, well, those costs aren't included in the price we pay at the store.
Yeah.
And so I said, well, how do you fix that? Well, I came up with this concept of true cost pricing. And there was actually some economists, that you could find on the web and so forth, Robert Repetto, who talked full cost pricing, but not to the extent that I was talking about it. And then the cradle-to-cradle pricing, I don't know who came up with it first. Could have been an architect in New York. But my proposal is that we hire some firm. And I said, well, maybe somebody like Consumer Reports magazine could do this. They don't have a vested interest in anything. They pride themselves on it. And all they really have to do is add health and ecological costs to their calculations. And then they find out what things cost, and then they assign that extra money to the retail price.
Good point, because if we put out something that, for example, has harmful emissions down the road, you're going to have a societal cost. We're all going to be paying for hospitalizations for all those folks with asthma and other lung conditions.
Cancers, or, too.
Yeah, with something like a wind project. They say, well, you know, it's going to produce X number of megawatts of power, but we're not talking about how much power goes into the manufacture. Some of these are actually made in coal-fired plants in China and then shipped around the world and so forth. So there's a lot of additional costs and environmental pollution in the production that really isn't talked about on those.
Yeah, that's why one of the reasons why I did solar. Like, you can have the same criticism for remote solar. Like, oh, let's put it out in the desert. There's nothing out there. Well, there's a whole bunch of life that lives out there.
Right.
It may be sparse, but what do you do when you put up a bunch of solar panels? Well, you scrape it and then you pave it with asphalt, and then you put all these panels out there.
Well, yeah, and then also if it's in a remote area, then you need more power lines pumping at long distance. You lose something in the transmission, so it's not as efficient as if you build it where the power is needed. And, of course, you've got the environmental dangers, the fire dangers. Let's not forget what started some of those big fires in 2007. It was power lines.
Yeah, and I mentioned earlier about the cash flow. It's like when we are producing energy remotely, however, and the shipping, the result, the electricity or whatever to us, we create a negative, what I call a negative energy purchase cash flow.
Mm-hmm.
If we produce it locally, we have a positive energy purchase cash flow.
And what would all of this mean for jobs and our local economy if you were to wave your magic wand and could somehow enact all these policies right now or some future group of policymakers puts them into place?
Well, I did a conservative job estimate of it based on electricity, which I had more research on that. Electricity makes up about 40% of the energy we use. So I figured, okay, then if we produce 400,000 job years of employment just to become renewable electricity, to become completely renewable electricity, we'd be producing about a million or more job years of employment locally.
And that's not even counting agriculture and water.
No, this is just for the becoming energy self-sufficient and water self-sufficient.
Amazing. Now, your pamphlet that you're distributing also talks about world population being part of the problem. Tell us about that. That's a little bit of a controversial area sometimes, and how you would address that.
Yeah, it is controversial, and I was really kind of frightened when I was, you know, trying to write it and articulate it. And what I realized is that, well, I mean, women can only do this, and they can only do this if they're free to choose to do it.
Yeah.
And I said, and if they're free to choose, and they choose to not have a limit per woman, but that women would average only 2 children during their reproductive cycle of their life. Some women would choose to have none, some would choose to have 1, others would choose to have 2 or 3 or even more. Mm-hmm. The point is that you're trying to get that 2-child average. And if we got that, in 200 years, we'd be down to 2.7 billion people. That was the population in 1960.
And to put it in perspective, we're at, what, 7 billion people right
we're
now?
We're 7.3.
So this would cut that down to less than half.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
A much more manageable population, especially if we're doing things along the lines of everything else I'm talking about.
Yeah, less pressure on our natural resources and everything
else.
Now, you've also talked about part of long-term sustainability is having plans for preparing for disasters. And you're not just talking about wildfires and earthquakes. It's on everyone's mind here in California, but some other things, too. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, what I looked at was what are the big ticket things that could happen to life on this planet? I don't know if anybody knows about this, but supposedly there's a super volcano that's predicted to erupt in Yellowstone Park.
I do know about that. You know, years ago, I toured a volcano observatory in Hawaii, of all places, and I interviewed a volcanologist, and he told me all about that, and I was just shocked. This thing could be massive. Maybe you have figures
and
with you.
Well, and the timing, you know, it's, I think it was 625,000 years ago or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was 625,000 years before that. So we're at about the 600,000.
It's due, in other words.
Yeah,
and it has been rumbling. They've been having some earthquakes and things up there.
But it doesn't even require that. It's just like a swarm of volcanoes.
Yeah.
I mean,
what happens if that goes? How big an impact would that be all the way down here in California, for instance?
Well, the danger is that a lot of explosions on Earth, big ones, like would be caused by a volcano and the ash and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
We'd be throwing all this very fine dust and ash way up and above the normal atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
And that would block sunlight. And if there's enough of it up there and it covers enough of the planet, basically no winter or no summer, you know, for, you know, a year or it could be several years.
So how do we prepare for something like
that?
Which certainly has occurred, you know, if you go back eons ago before people were on Earth, this certainly occurred. What can be done?
Well, those kinds of things, the only thing we can really do at this point, or because of scientific technology, doesn't allow us to do anything to ease the pressure on supervolcanoes or even volcanoes in general. But we can prepare. We can store food. We can store water. We can put together shelter. I mean, actually, I think it was Switzerland. They basically built a bomb shelter for the whole country.
Very interesting.
I mean, that's the idea, that if you really care about the future, if you're not so involved in your own personal movie that you do see the future and you realize these other people are going to be born and live, hopefully. And also, I look at it from the perspective that though each human family is finite, at least as far as we know, the human family's life is potentially infinite, but only if we live correctly on our planet with each other.
Well, those are very wise words, Jim. Now, on another note, you have been a past mayoral candidate yourself here in San Diego more than once, and I was wondering what your thoughts are about the current mayor and council's energy self-sufficiency plan by 2035, this plan that they've come up with.
Yeah, I'm not a real authority on it. I skimmed it. I was kind of looking for, you know, some facts and figures, and I didn't find any. They're sort of dribbling out. But one thing I did notice is that the first thing it says, we're going to become renewable energy self-sufficient by 2035. But when you look at what they're talking about, it's really just becoming renewable electricity self-sufficient.
Not relying on the kind of things you're talking about. How would they get there?
A big part of it is going to be wind.
Yeah, which is very destructive in East County. There's huge opposition to that out here, destroying places like McCain Valley, for example. And we all saw what happened in Ocotillo, where they went right over Indian burial grounds and put these right next to people's homes and 500-foot-tall towers adjacent to Anzuparaco Desert State Park, destroying views and impacting desert bighorn sheep and other things. So
you get, this is a sore spot for you, I can tell.
Well, yeah, East County, it is kind of a sore spot. What can listeners out there do if they want to try to get these politicians down in San Diego to adopt something closer to your plan rather than the current mayor's plan?
And even I'm not saying the plan has to be exactly like what I'm laying out. But I realize that it's going to have to be something like this in order to get us past this rough spot we're going through.
How do we get that conversation going? It's one thing to read a pamphlet and say, "Hey, that sounds like a good idea," but beyond that, what can folks do?
Well, right now, even though I've been doing this for about 40 years, this new strategy is kind of in its infancy. So the best thing is for them to do is to give me a call or email me.
Jim, where can people reach you if they want to get in touch or they want to get more information?
The phone number is 619-758-9020. To get a copy of the Common Sense paper, you go to jimbell.com, and then on the left side of the page you'll see some little buttons. Click on the Consciousness and Knowledge button, and that'll bring the paper right up for you.
Very good. Well, Jim, I want to thank you so much for joining us here today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
My pleasure.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
This is Ed Moreno with the Sports Report. The San Diego State Aztecs men's basketball team will face off against the St. John's Red Storm this Friday night in North Carolina as March Madness begins, with SDSU making its sixth straight appearance at the NCAA tournament. The Aztecs are seated at number 8, while St. John's is seated at number 9 in the bracket. The winner of this matchup will likely face a tough opponent in the second round, with the number 1 seeded Duke Blue Devils, who this weekend are set to face the number 16 seed, which has not yet been determined. If Duke wins this weekend, which seems likely, the Aztecs could face their toughest challenge yet. But first they need to take care of business against St. John's. The Red Storm's lineup is made up of mostly guards, which means compared to SDSU, they are relatively undersized. Yet despite the appearance of a mismatch in the Aztecs' favor, SDSU has had issues on offense as of late. Their offense struggled to make shots in a loss to Wyoming in the Mountain West Conference Championship last week, and they wound up sharing the conference title with the Cowboys. St. John's is going to be short one of their top shot-blocking defenders, as he was suspended for the tournament because he tested positive for marijuana, the New York Post reports. In the past, the Aztecs have made it to the round of 16 and lost. While fans dream of a Final Four appearance, it may be a tough go this year with Duke looming over the bracket. The Aztecs and Red Storm face off on Friday at 6:40 local time.
Earlier this week, we reported on controversial gang conspiracy charges filed by San Diego District Attorney Bonnie DeMonis against local men who were accused of benefiting off crimes that they were never accused of committing. Specifically, those crimes included shootings allegedly committed by the Lincoln Park gang. The American Civil Liberties Union filed a challenge on constitutional grounds. On Monday, San Diego Superior Court Judge Louis Hanoyan dismissed the conspiracy charges against 14 defendants, including rapper Tiny Doo, whose real name is Brandon Duncan, and co-defendant Aaron Harvey. Both of these defendants claimed they were not members of the gang, and neither had a felony record. The prosecutor alleged that Duncan benefited off the gang's crimes through rap music lyrics about gang shootings. Harvey had reportedly posted gang signs and photos taken with gang members on his Facebook page, which the prosecution argued increased his credibility on the streets. Gang membership on its own is actually not a crime, but if DeMonis' efforts had prevailed, it effectively would be. She is the first prosecutor in the state who has sought to hold gang members accountable for the crimes of fellow gang members under Penal Code 182.5, a gang conspiracy law passed by voters, and she went as far as to claim that mere guilt by association is enough to put defendants away, potentially for life. Nobody has been charged with the actual killings. And that led Judge Hanoyan to ask, how can you attach a conspiracy to a crime that doesn't have a defendant? And so he dismissed the most serious charges against 14 defendants charged with benefiting off crimes committed by gang members. The judge let stand charges, however, against other defendants, who the evidence suggested may actually have ties to violent crimes, including attempted murder. Judge Hanoyan is the second judge to dismiss gang conspiracy charges related to the Lincoln Park gang. Judge David Gill earlier this year had split the group of defendants in half, and gang conspiracy charges against the other defendants were also dismissed. However, in an unrelated case, Judge Jeffrey Fraser has ruled that there is enough evidence to move forward in prosecuting a similar case against 18 alleged members of a gang in the South Crest area, UT San Diego reports. The district attorney's office has not yet said whether it will appeal the decision to a higher court. Tanya Sierra, a spokeswoman for the district attorney, issued a statement indicating, "While a debate over the law can be constructive and educational, combating the scourge of deadly gang violence remains our focus." She added, "It's unfortunate that in spite of the evidence transparently available in the court record and court's rulings that clearly establish their active gang membership during the time of the shootings, the media and community has allowed itself to be manipulated by individuals who are misrepresenting their true level of gang involvement." Outside the courthouse after the ruling, Duncan stated, "It's a hard situation when you know you had nothing to do with those crimes," UT San Diego reports. Harvey voiced his resolve to work toward repeal of the penal code section in question. "This was just round one," he stated, Voice of San Diego reports. On Monday, Harvey's attorney, Edward Kinsey, told Voice of San Diego that he believes the district attorney may seek to refile charges. "I think that gang documentation oversight is something that needs to be done," the attorney states. "That is the more important issue, as many young black men are unjustly swept up in this craziness." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
La Mesa has selected a new police chief. Walter Vasquez, a 28-year veteran of the San Diego Police Department, will be the new head of La Mesa's police force. Vasquez will replace Chief Ed Aceves, who retired in December after 30 years with the department. Vasquez is currently the Assistant Chief of Police in San Diego, where he oversees the K-9 Unit, SWAT, Communications Division, Information Services, Property Room, and the Chief's Community Advisory Boards. He has served with the SDPD since 1986. In 2007, he attended the FBI National Academy in Quantico, Virginia, a 10-week leadership program established by the FBI for local and state law enforcement agencies. Vasquez received a bachelor's degree in business management. According to La Mesa City Manager David Witt, Walter Vasquez is known throughout the law enforcement community in the San Diego region and comes to La Mesa with high recommendations from his peers. Witt added that the opening attracted a wide range of candidates both inside and outside our region. Born and raised in San Diego, he also has strong ties to East County. He graduated from Helix High School and currently lives in El Cajon, along with his wife, son, and daughter. Vasquez will be taking over as the new chief on April 6th, when a swearing-in ceremony is planned at the La Mesa Police Department. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Ed Barrena.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week. This week's Destination East County includes a star party and a free community festival and lakeside theater and musical events.
Plus, we'll have a preview of coming attractions, including some major music festivals, historical reenactments, egg hunt extravaganza, and a family fiddle camp.
Stay tuned for all of these events and much, much more from East County Magazine. Want an up-close view of stars and planets? You can take a look through some high-powered telescopes and learn the science and legends of the nighttime sky at the Oak Oasis County Preserve in Lakeside from March 21st from 7 to 9 p.m. There will also be campfires, s'mores, and music. You can also opt to stay overnight for a family campout that includes a ranger-led hike to see bats after dark. For details, visit County of San Diego Parks and Recreation on Facebook or call 858-565-3600 to reserve.
The County of San Diego invites you to It's How We Live, a free community festival for the entire family. It will be held Saturday, March 21st at Lakeside's Lindo Lake Park. This event includes games, activities, a rock climbing wall, live entertainment, information booths, healthy food samples, health and dental screenings, prizes and giveaways to help you find a path to a healthier you. The festival will follow the community's annual Run for the Arts Marathon, which benefits the Lakeside Union School District. For details on the run, visit Lakeside Run for the Arts on Facebook.
Spring is in the air, and Julian's Town Hall will be the setting for a daffodil show on March 21st and 22nd. You can bring your daffodils for judging on Friday, March 20th, from 12 to 4 p.m., with questions answered by the National Daffodil Society experts.
Lamplighters Theater in La Mesa presents Goodbye Charlie each Friday and Saturday evening in March. The comedy focuses on a man who is shot by his lover's jealous husband and is reincarnated as a woman, and soon finds a way to take advantage of the situation. For tickets and details, visit lamplighterlamesa.com.
Remember Donnie and Marie? One half of that duo, Marie Osmond, will be performing in concert on March 25th and 26th at Sequan's Live and Up Close Theater. She recorded her first hit, Paper Roses, at the age of 12 and got a Grammy nomination and has been in the limelight ever since. She's done Broadway, Vegas, Dancing with the Stars, and most recently, in 2011, went on tour with her new album, A Little Bit of Country and a Whole Lot More. For tickets and details, you can visit Sequan.com. Now for a preview of coming attractions.
Take a trip back in time to life in the 1860s frontier days during Vallecitos Day on Saturday, March 28th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Vallecitos County Park. This year's event focuses on cattle drives and cattle ranching along the Southern Overland Trail, with cattle ranching demonstrations as well as the arrival of trail riders on horseback. You can also visit with pioneer men and women in period attire, visit a mountain man camp, and hear historic talks, as well as experiencing frontier equipment, crafts, and firearms. Visitors are encouraged to dress in frontier attire. Be sure to bring a picnic lunch since there's no food at the site. Vallecitos County Park is located in Anza Borrego Desert on County Route S2, marker 3435. For more information, visit sdparks.org.
The Ramona Music Fest will be held March 28th in Ramona. featuring emerging talent and popular San Diego musicians playing everything from rock to reggae and from country to Americana. This all-day outdoor event benefits the Ramona Rotary and Kiwanis Clubs. The festival will also be held at the Ramona Outdoor Community Center, also known as the Rodeo Fairgrounds. For details, visit ramonamusicfest.org.
Adrian Nims will perform a free saxophone and flute concert on Saturday, March 28th at 3 p.m. at the Mission Trails Regional Park Visitor Center. Seating is limited to 93 people and are available on a first-come, first-served basis. For directions to the park, visit mtrp.org.
The Easter Bunny train will be rolling out of the Campo Depot at the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum on March 28th and 29th and on April 4th. This annual family event includes a ride aboard the vintage train and an Easter egg hunt. For details, visit psrm.org.
Santee Lakes invites the public to its annual egg extravaganza on April 4th. This community event features continuous egg hunts for children ages 8 and under, live entertainment, petting zoo, pony rides, craft booths, and carnival rides brought to you by the City of Santee and the Padre Dam Municipal Water District. For full details, hop on over to SanteeLakes.com.
12 top bands will take stage at the 16th Annual Spring Harmonica Extravaganza at La Mesa's Harry Griffin Park on Saturday, April 4th, from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. This will be an all-day harmonica event. This annual outdoor family-friendly musical tribute is a fundraiser to support children's music education in San Diego. Last year, the organization donated $3,000 of the proceeds to the Blues Lovers United of the San Diego's Blues in the Schools program to help pass the love of the harmonica on to the next generation. For a full lineup, see springharpfest.org.
The Julian Family Fiddle Camp will be held at Camp Cedar Glen, April 8th through the 12th, providing an immersion-style roots music camp for folks of all ages and levels wanting to improve their skills on fiddle, mandolin, guitar, or old-time banjo. Some of the most renowned North American artists serve as faculty, with attendees coming from across the United States as well as abroad. Tents and RVs are allowed, with evening concerts for the public on Friday, April 10th, and Saturday, April 11th at 7 p.m. For more information, go to familyfiddlecamp.com. That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more on our calendar and in our festival and events sections online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions on East County Magazine.
See you around, East County.
After the weekend's record-breaking temperatures, a high-pressure system is forecast to bring cooler weather for the rest of this week. The National Weather Service predicts a slight chance of showers over the mountains late Wednesday and Thursday, but any rainfall will be limited to just sprinkles, less than one-tenth of an inch. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Leon Thompson.
Someone collapses near you, at the gym, the store, or even at work. They are showing the classic signs of sudden cardiac arrest. No heartbeat, no breathing. What do you do? How can you help? Defibrillators can save lives. In fact, you're twice as likely to survive a heart attack that occurs outside of a hospital if you receive both CPR and defibrillation than if you get CPR alone. Now, the City of San Diego, the County, and the County Fire Chiefs Association are looking for ways to make automated external defibrillators, or AEDs, easier to find. A new smartphone app called PulsePoint AED allows you to register the location of an AED when you see one. If you're trained in CPR, you can then be notified about the location of the nearest AED in case of a medical emergency. At a news conference held Monday outside the County Administration Building, leaders of the city, the county, and the County Fire Chiefs Association announced plans to create a comprehensive map of AEDs across our region using the PulsePoint app, and they're asking help from the public through a crowdsourcing campaign.
Bill Horn, chairman of the Board of Supervisors, said the county plans to buy about 30 new AEDs to put in sheriff's supervisors' vehicles. He also asked for citizens' help to identify the location of other AEDs.
Today is Pulse Point AED. This is to help the citizens, really help us locate all of the defibrillators around the city and the county of San Diego.
Supervisor Ron Roberts also spoke about the importance of this project.
We want to know, to the maximum extent possible, where these are so they can be available in any kind of emergency. We have a chance to save more lives with the public's help.
Now, members of the public who register the most AEDs will earn prizes as part of a contest organized by the Pulse Point Foundation. Prizes will include an iPad donated by American Medical Response, an autographed football from the San Diego Chargers, Amazon gift cards donated by Pulse Point, and more. The Pulse Point AED app allows anybody in the community to submit an AED, including the exact location, description, and photo. All submitted AEDs are verified by San Diego emergency medical professionals before they appear in Pulse Point Respond. When Pulse Point Respond issues a CPR needed alert, providing the location of the emergency, it also sends the location of the nearest AED. San Diego Fire Rescue Chief Javier Maynard said the city has already registered over 1,000 AEDs, and so now the push is to create a county-wide map. Chief Don Butts, the president of the San Diego County Fire Chiefs Association, said fire agencies around the county are behind this effort, noting that every minute can make a difference when it comes to sudden cardiac arrest. Each minute that a victim waits for CPR, the chances of survival drop by up to 10%. So in those minutes, while waiting for medical personnel to arrive, citizens can make a big difference by signing up for Pulse Point and knowing where the nearest AED can be found. You can download the apps through Google Play or the Apple App Store to start registering AEDs with Pulse Point AED and be eligible to win prizes. You are also encouraged to get trained in CPR and how to use AEDs and to sign up to receive the alert when your help may be needed. The American Red Cross, American Heart Association, and San Diego Project Heartbeat provide trainings throughout the year. You may just help save someone's life. For more information, visit the county's Pulse Point information page, or to download these apps, visit pulsepoint.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
The Sheriff's Office is inviting you down to the station to have coffee with the community on Tuesday, March 24th at the Santee Sheriff Station from 10 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. Coffee with the community gives the public a chance to chat with the station's captain, lieutenant, crime prevention specialist, and deputies to exchange ideas and concerns over a free cup of coffee. The coffee event will be held at the Santee Sheriff Station Conference Room at 8811 Cuyamaca Street in Santee. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Beretta.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Berena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, A.K. Jules, Kevin McLeod, Giovanni Galicia, and the Smashing Beats. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.